This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
This is Joy 94.9 and you are on The Escape Hour. My name is Russ Masterton and you are here with the lovely, the glamorous Fiona Brooke, who is probably the better half of this team on this Saturday, I would have to say.
Well, that's very nice of you to say that, Russ. I don't know necessarily if that's always the case. I'm often feeling a bit rusty when I come in here on a Saturday morning.
Well, you do have your big Friday nights, my dear, don't you?
Well, you know, it's hard working girl. On a Friday night, you just need to kick it up a little bit.
You do. And if anyone doesn't deserve it, it's more than you. Your job in this world is to find every gin palace in Melbourne and you found most of them, haven't you?
Oh, there are new ones I haven't tried, I can assure you.
Now, we digress because we have to talk about a destination that is so dear to Australians' hearts. And we are travelling to where today, Fiona?
We're travelling to Bali.
Oh, my God.
Ubud specifically, but Bali in general, because our guest is a very well-known Bali identity, Janet Deneff. Janet, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now, Russ, Janet is a well-known published author. I think it's been three books, has it, Janet?
Yes. Well, I'd sort of say two and a half because one of them I published myself.
Oh, it's still a book. Janet also, and some of those, two of those cookbooks.
Yeah, first one was Fragrant Rice, a memoir.
I read your memoir, but like the first time I went to Bali. That is all about Janet. Now we're a bit digressing.
Okay, that's okay. But I feel like I'm in a girl's catch up. I'm loving every minute of it.
So that's actually about Janet's life living in Bali since the mid 80s, but we'll get back to that in a minute. And then the other two were cookbooks.
Well, the other one, the last one was a cookbook, and the one in the middle was just kind of a collection of my articles from the Garuda In Flight and Jakarta Post.
All stories about Bali.
Stories about Bali. Yeah.
Now, also, Russ, Janet is a restaurateur. She owns Casa Luna, which is a fabulous restaurant in downtown Ubud. She runs a cooking school. Janet runs a cooking school. So when you go to Bali, her cooking classes are very well known. She also is the founder and director of the Ubud Writers and Readers Festival and the founder of the more recent Ubud Food Festival. Janet, wow, that's quite a lot. You must be a very busy lady.
Oh, no, not really.
You're the pillar of Ubud, aren't you? Are you the mayor of Ubud? I'll ask that.
Oh, no.
So, Janet, you are in Melbourne at the moment because you have a residence in Melbourne and you are, in fact, here for an event at the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival.
Yes, very excited about that.
Which is really wonderful because one of the things that everyone loves about Bali, of course, is the traditional food.
Absolutely.
Mm. And eating in a Balinese warung. And Janet will be bringing a Balinese warung to Melbourne for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival at the end of March. And we're going to talk a little bit about that but later on. But first of all, maybe, Janet, you want to give us a little bit of a rundown of, I mean, the steps that it took you to become the Queen of Ubud.
I get into trouble when you say that, actually.
Oh, okay.
Because there probably really is a Queen of Ubud, right?
There is a Queen of Ubud.
Well, kind of, yeah. We have a lot of princes and princesses.
That's right,
in
you
Ubud.
Too.
Yes, and I'm not one of them, so okay. Yeah.
Well, we'll call you the Queen of Ubud for today.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. So, talking about the Writers' Festival, and how it started.
Yeah, I think that there's a fascinating story from a traveller's point of view about how that came to be, which sort of I think would be of interest to the listeners.
Yeah. Well, we started the Ubud Writers and Readers Festival in response to the first Bali bombings, actually, because, as you know, I mean, it was a major tragedy for everybody involved. But, of course, for the Balinese, of course, it dug very deeply and it was an absolute major tragedy for them. And I think everybody was in shock and deeply depressed and confused and just, very sad. Mm-hmm. And I suppose for me on the ground, I just thought, wow, and there's nothing, there's no support system. You can't then get government assistance. I mean, everybody lost their jobs. So that's when I thought, okay, I have to help. And I thought, you know, Bali's been very good to me. Now it's my turn to give back. So, I decided about what sort of, what we could do together to turn it around. So I started to think, well, if you want to bring tourism back, you've got to bring famous people first and then everybody will follow. So I thought we have to create an event. And I thought it has to have meaning because Ubud's not your average place. It has to have some sort of cultural significance, a meaning for the community because Ubud's very much about community. So I started to think about writers because at that time I was finishing my first book, Fragrant Rice. So I was already sort of moving into literary circles as such and I was already being invited to other writers' festivals. So I thought, I got a good idea. Let's do a writers' festival. So off we went, and it was kind of cute later because I remember once we decided to do it and, okay, we were going to start the first one in October, and I had a manager at the time at our restaurant, which was going to then be the main venue. So we'd had many meetings, you know, we'd briefed him all about this and that and schedules everywhere. But like a day before the festival, he said, but Ibu, he said, I still don't know what a writer's festival is.
Wow.
That would have been so daunting. I mean, I can, when you put it into perspective, I mean, one day the Balinese are all employed and it's this bustling tourism industry and the next minute, voomph, it's all completely wiped out. And they're looking at people for answers and, you know, what do we do?
Well, look, it's not entirely different to what's happened with the volcano, actually. Just suddenly everyone's gone and I'm thinking, yeah, but actually I don't think it's going to erupt, to be honest. Telling guests that who,
Well, I mean, I was guilty of that because I was scheduled to go to a retreat in December, and even though I'd been very flim-flammy on my decision-making, I didn't. I had other arrangements and in Melbourne that I couldn't take any chances on not being here. So even though I hadn't really booked anything and I certainly hadn't booked any flights, it did. So I'm guilty of that too.
So to give listeners at the moment some perspective, okay, Bali, obviously most of our people will have heard of Bali. Where is Ubud? What makes it so special? Because I know from a travel perspective, I've got a travel agency and I'm just at that very point after all of these many years in travel when people come and say, where should I go to in Bali? And the first thing that comes out of my mouth now is Ubud. So why Ubud? What is it? How beautiful is it?
Well, I mean, when I first went to Ubud in 75, you know, the attraction then, of course, was Kuta. For me, there's something, especially in Bali and maybe, well, I don't know about Asia, but there's just always been that attraction with Ubud. So that's where I went back to in 84 and stayed. It has the most fantastic community feel and it's still very strong. You know, I mean, everybody wants to feel in a way that it's going to erode, but I'm in the middle of it and ain't nothing going to move that, you know. So I think that's what ultimately people are attracted to, apart from that tropical beauty, because it is sort of the foothills of the mountains, Gunung Agung, etc. From our restaurant, on a clear day, you can see the volcano. So it's really magical. And I guess you're surrounded by nature. Even in the middle of Ubud, it's pretty dense, but you only have to drive 5 minutes away and you're already on the edge of rice fields or glorious countryside.
You don't even have to, you can actually just walk.
Just walk, yes.
Walk out the back and you walk through the rice fields. That's one of my favourite things. I mean, I'm a regular to Ubud, so I'm a little bit biased. I just love stepping out into the rice fields and wandering around out the back. And
that
just
lovely, tranquil, quiet, And I think too, because at some point you see a ceremony or a procession and you can't help but be charmed by the offerings everywhere, just a little flower on the ground or, you know, mother putting the offerings and the incense. I mean, everything is beautiful, actually. Yeah. And the old temples, you know, the drive from Denpasar to Ubud is still beautiful because just there's, yeah, old temples with the what you call it, like the curved frangipani trees, and there's just this sense of artistry in absolutely everything they do, and then the warmth of the people on top of that.
Sounds absolutely beautiful. I can tell you that I have not stayed in Ubud, but I've been there several times, and it is adorable. And interesting, one of the reasons why I like to tell people to go there now is there's a few things. If you haven't been to Bali before, you generally don't swim in the ocean. Most people would
swim
use
in their
the
pools.
So there's no real loss to not having a place to stay out by the sea.
Yeah.
Secondly, in Bali, you've got Kuta, Legian and Denpasar, and there's too much traffic. It's complete chaos.
Yes.
Whereas you head to your beautiful Ubud,
and
it's heaven on a stick, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and they've actually also been addressing the traffic that we get in the busier times of the year, because you can't actually park on the main road anymore.
It is actually a little bit heavy traffic sometimes.
Yeah, well, they've stopped us parking on the main road. So they've actually been dealing with that. I think they just figured, well, there's nobody here, so why don't we just fix up things a little bit? So, yeah.
So it's quiet at the moment.
Yeah, it's very quiet. I mean, it is quiet season, but it's still down.
And this is all set to change very soon when the Ubud Food Festival starts.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, when is that?
Well, that's going to be April
13 until 15.
Okay, so you've got your post-Easter, I've had enough of my life, if I eat one more chocolate egg, I'm going to vomit. I need to go to Ubud because I want to go to something special.
And I believe, I've been looking at the events, they look incredible.
I know.
So I think that's the next thing that we should really talk about.
I've missed my favourite show on Joy. What do I do? What do I do?
Podcasters to battle!
Joy podcasters fight on tirelessly to bring you the best bits of every show. So if you've missed something recently on Joy, don't worry. Our podcasters have your back. Head to joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab or look us up on iTunes. Podcasters on Joy 94.9 fighting tirelessly for your listening pleasure.
This is Joy 94.9. My name's Russ Masterton. You are on the fabulous Escape Hour today. I'm here with the lovely Fiona Brooke, and she is a Bali freak, Bali fanatic.
I'm a bit of a fan, I have to say. I find it quite frustrating when people say, oh, they don't like it, or, you know, they've never been, they've just heard bad things. And I'm like, well, if you're just going to hang out in Kuta, I mean, what do you expect? I've never been to Kuta, but I was unfortunately on a bus from the airport that actually stopped in Kuta. And when we were driving through it, I was like, oh, my God, this is what everyone talks about. Quickly, can the bus move? I'm sure there are some lovely people down there, though.
No, they're all bogans. I won't hear it. The nice people are all in Ubud. They seriously are.
There are lots of nice people in Ubud. And we are talking about the Ubud Food Festival, which is coming up the 13th to the 16th of April, which is just 15th.
Yep.
The 16th is the day you fly out. That's the Monday.
Yes.
Janet, tell us more about the Ubud Food Festival. How long has it been going for?
Well, it's 4 years now, and we started it after we sort of did a few test runs during the Ubud Writers Festival with a kitchen program. So it's been going from strength to strength, and it's pretty exciting, actually, because we bring in Indonesia's leading chefs and guys off the island around Bali. And then also we bring in other Asian chefs.
That's right. I noticed that in your program you've got chefs around Southeast Asia.
Yes, yeah. So it's very much about Asian food. It's a mixture of, like, Western chefs and Asian chefs, and it's very much also about what they're doing with the local ingredients and what sort of innovations they're coming up with.
Well, what's been fascinating about Bali in general, and Russ, I'm not sure that as a not so much foodie, you might not be aware, but Ubud is pretty much, I mean, in Bali in general, there has been an absolute food revolution. The restaurants and what they're, I mean, the restaurateurs from Australia are going over there.
Right.
People like Jeff Lindsay, who we're going to have on the program, many Australian chefs and British chefs and things like that are going to Bali and they're setting up restaurants and versions of their other restaurants in the other cities. And they are pushing the boundaries in the food industry.
That is awesome. Now, I will say to Janet, I have been an Ubud Philistine. Is that the right word?
I think Philistine is the right word.
Okay, good. Okay, I'm loving that.
I think that if you could say Philistine, maybe you're not a Philistine. I don't know.
I stand corrected. Anyway, we talk about Ubud, and, you know, I will say that my good friend Roy posted all of these photos about how fabulous the villa was he stayed in Ubud and how fabulous the restaurants were in Ubud. Mm-hmm. He didn't leave Ubud for the entire week that they were up in. Up in Bali, and this is what's got me and my partner interested. So when we're up there this October, we will be hopefully staying with Janet, who I want to get some details from after the show.
Yay.
And I want to try all of this fabulous food that's on show up in Ubud. So what, where and how, girls?
Well,
tell me
I'll let Janet talk about that.
I mean, you've got such incredible variety because you can just sort of hop along to a warung, like a really simple eatery, which, I mean, they're charming and they're cute and they're exactly traditional food, you know. Or you can hang out in some sort of groovy cafe that's doing interesting dishes, or the other cafe that's all vegan. I think we're becoming like a global centre of veganism.
What they're doing in vegan and vegetarian food in Ubud is
pretty mind-blowing.
Really? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. Better than any vegan or vegetarian restaurant in Melbourne, for sure.
Yeah, I think so. And, and then you can be carnivore or... and then you can go to the top of the line, which is the Locavore, which is among the top 50 restaurants in Asia.
Wow.
And they're pushing the boundaries in that sort of contemporary way, but again, using traditional dishes, and everything just looks stunning.
And you have to book in advance.
You've got to book weeks in advance. So you've got the most extraordinary choices.
And so did when you were first moved to Ubud in the 80s, I imagine a bit of a country town, really, very
totally,
small and
totally,
very tiny.
Totally, yeah.
And as a community, you've all got together and decided, right, well, we want to specialise in food. We want to have a township here that is self-contained when the tourists aren't around, all of that sort
no,
of stuff.
No, we never did that.
No. I would imagine.
We never got together.
Yeah. No, because it
just grew like that.
Yeah,
it was just
you've
organic.
Made it into this amazing resort town on its own.
I actually think... what set it off were the women of Ubud, actually.
Yeah? Okay,
the Ubud's best restaurants back then were owned by Balinese women.
Fantastic.
And they all had quite interesting and extraordinary and very warm personalities. So
cool.
You had Chandri in Monkey Forest Road up the top near the market. I wrote about her and I said what made Chandri's place so absolutely fantastic was simply Chandri, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you thought her food's pretty average, but you just loved it because she was there, you know.
Yeah.
It was the place to go. And then also Murni's on the bridge there. I mean, you went there because Murni was there.
Yeah, forever.
Forever. And was it Cafe Wayan that was started by Ibu Wayan? And again, you went there because of her. Okawati loved her to pieces. She was there. So I really believe that it's the women, the Balinese women, that sort of set Ubud on its culinary trail.
Wow, that's awesome.
Well, I guess there's a lot of traditionally the food is all prepared by the women, but except for, of course, with things like the baba ghooling.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if you want to explain a little bit, because that does actually tie into why Janet is in Melbourne.
Yeah.
But is the baba ghooling all prepared by the men?
Yeah. So, I mean, the women do the everyday food, you know, the food that nourishes and nurtures the family. So that's why I love Balinese food, because for me it's very much about a mother's love, you know. It feels really like mother's home cooking. Yeah, the baba ghooling and those other sort of dishes are more elaborate. And
take a lot of time.
And I think that's, you know, the men come in that arena when it's more elaborate, more muscle kind of grease involved. So
you better run us through what Baba Guling is for those that don't know.
So babi in Indonesian is pig or pork, and guling means to guling it, to put it on the rotisserie thing, the turnaround. What do you call that? Spin. Something like spit. Yeah, spit. That's it. Yeah, babi guling. So we decided to do that for the event because I thought, well, it's kind of Bali's iconic dish. I mean, for those who do eat pork, you know, it's been...
What sort of spices are involved in baba guling?
Well, everything. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about Balinese food. When they use spices, they pretty well use everything all the time.
Okay.
You know, then when you go to Java, it's like, well, this dish, you know, you don't use turmeric or you don't use whatever, this or this or this. Or, you know, that's kind of got to be green, you know, that sort of thing. But Bali, they just can't help themselves. So there's always tons of turmeric and galangal and ginger, and then there's shrimp paste and there's coriander seeds and there's lemongrass and lime leaves and cumin, candle nut, even a bit of nutmeg. So it's just like they just go into the kitchen cabin and just tip it all in, you know. So the babi guling has a lot of spices in it. Now, but it's not spicy, though.
But it's not spicy.
Not necessarily.
I noticed that you use, is it coffee wood for
for the babi guling, yeah, because I think it burns at a low, slow, sort of consistent rate.
And how long does it take to cook?
Oh, well, depends on the babi, but 3 to 4 hours, I suppose.
Oh, okay. So it's not like an overnight thing.
No. Yeah.
Because when you're in Ubud, of course, you can see walking down the laneways, you know, men with their ceremonial hats walking along with a little bit of a pig between them.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, the pigs are not they're not like gigantor pigs that you have in Australia. I don't know whether they're a different breed, but
they're similar though. Because, I mean, the heritage pig is not used as much anymore. Was a little black pig with the belly that sort of almost touched the ground. Uh-huh. You see those if you go to East Bali or around sort of a little bit south of Chanidasa in the back streets, you'll still see those little pigs walking around the place. But yeah.
And then the other dish that you will be preparing for the event for Melbourne Food and Wine will be the duck.
No, the chicken.
Oh, the chicken.
Chicken, yeah. But it's like, sounds like duck. It's the better to I am, because otherwise we have the better to bebe. So we're doing the slow roasted chicken.
Yeah.
So actually we roast it first and then we actually simmer it for about 4 to 5 hours.
You roast it first and then you simmer it.
Yeah, I think
it sounds backwards.
Well, you just sort of seal it in the oven, you toss it around, and then you just slowly simmer it.
Mm, my goodness. Now, I think that, you know, Indonesian food has really been underappreciated within the Southeast Asian cuisines. You know, you've had food like the Thai food, which has been a predominant cuisine in the area. Why do you think Indonesian food hasn't been until recently recognised?
You've heard this talk a lot. You know, when suddenly Thai food was everywhere, remember that? Suddenly it was like kabam, you know, an explosion of Thai food. There was actually a government initiative that allowed people to set up restaurants in other parts of the world. So I think there was a financial assistance, and there was also this trade thing where they could in turn buy their spices very easily, whatever they needed, very easily through government assistance. So there was actually a financial injection
and
a very deliberate move to send their food out around the world. Mm. And, of course, Indonesian hasn't got around to doing that. I think and also often you find that the Indonesian food outside of Indonesia is not a match on what you get at home. I think because it's perhaps a bit labour intensive. There's a huge amount of diversity. Each island is almost like a separate country in a way. So
absolutely,
the food is different. So even just to find an iconic dish that represents Indonesia, I mean, they talk about nasi goreng, fried rice. but that's actually Chinese. Mm. You know, mee goreng Chinese, kind of Indonesian street food. Now they've sort of settled on rendang, which is the slow-cooked beef, which is Indonesian, not Malaysian. It's really hard to pinpoint something else, you know.
Well, I mean, in all the times that I've been to Bali, I was actually on an island off Lombok a few years ago, and I came across martabak.
Martabak.
And I'd never had martabak before, and we found this little place in the village of one of the little islands.
Yeah. Is that the sweet martabak?
It was actually the savoury.
I love it.
And this was like on Gili Air.
And I'd
been to Gili Air a lot of times, but I had only just discovered it. So we found this beautiful little place. They were selling the martabaks for like $3. We chatted to the guy. He was from Java. I was surprised. I was like, I've come to Bali. They don't have this on the menu in...
No, I mean, yeah.
And a martabak, it's like a... It's a pancake.
Yeah, it's like a pancake. But if you get the savoury one, well, sometimes they call it martabak masir. Masir is Egypt. So yeah, it's like a savoury pancakey thing with a filling,
like either chicken or cheese, and then they fold it up in on top of each other, and it's crispy.
It sounds really yummy.
Russ, but I was so addicted, I had to go and have one every time.
But if you didn't try the sweet ones,
I don't know if you made sweet ones.
Yes, they're outrageous. They're like,
do they have Nutella in them?
Yes, they've got everything. They're like thick pancakes, and they put crazy fillings. My girlfriend had one, and I think they called it something like Four Seasons. And it was like, I think it was peanut butter, jam, cheese and chocolate or something all together.
I'm loving the sound of that.
Because, you know, the leftover from the Dutch, they're big on cheese and chocolate together.
Wow.
For all voices, this is Joy.
This is Joy 94.9. This is The Escape Hour. It's Saturday afternoon, and God, what a beautiful day it is here in Melbourne. My name's Russ Masterson, and across from me is another sunny face, and that's the face of Fiona Brooke, who is our guest today, Fiona. And
well, Russ, we've been chatting to Janet Deneff.
About Bali.
About Ubud in specific, Bali in general, but Ubud in specific. We've covered the Ubud Food Festival, which is coming up in April. We're about to launch into a brief summation of the Ubud Writers and Readers Festival, which is at what time of the year, Janet?
October 24 until 28.
Who are some of your guests this year?
I don't think I'm allowed to tell you yet.
Oh, it's a secret.
It's a secret.
First on Joy. Hey, listen, Janet, I'm curious. Why would our Joy listeners be interested in the Ubud Writers Festival? Just for the sake of it.
Well, you get the most extraordinary mix of writers.
You get some good talent there.
Oh, it's seriously fantastic. And we get... writers that are challenging the norms and pushing the boundaries, like we were talking before. We've had the most extraordinary people, and some people have said to us that our Writers' Festival is really a human rights festival, posing as a writers' festival.
Oh, fun.
But you just see people from all walks of life just talking about their struggles and their issues and how they deal with it with their writing, and it's inspirational.
That's fantastic. And so you sign up, obviously, and you attend and you stay in places all over Ubud.
All over Ubud,
It sounds awesome. Have you been, Fee?
No, I haven't been to the Writers' Festival. I'm hoping to go to the Food Festival this year, though.
Oh.
Yep. October is a tricky time in Melbourne. It's very busy in my work in Melbourne in October.
Oh, I'm going to be up there in October. I must check our dates.
Oh, yes. You need to 24
till
28 October.
All right, maybe I'll have to... Look at the itinerary and go for it, which would be great. Mm-mm. So Bali, we talk in general from a travel perspective. The pluses are quite simple, that often airfares are cheaper to go to Bali than they are to stay in our own country. Yep. Accommodation in general is cheap and very, very good. Mm-hmm. Food is extraordinary. It doesn't cost $300 per person to go and fine dine in that beautiful country.
Although there are places now where it does cost a little bit more.
There is a few. It depends on those little stars, I would imagine.
But you get something really amazing.
Really spectacular.
In essence, the main reason to go to Bali, aside from value for money, is the people. And we were just discussing that off air, that they are the most beautiful, non-judgmental people that you've ever come across. Janet, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, over 30 years, you know, I've been a part of the community, and I think generally they're very warm and kind, and they treat people with respect and very welcoming. I think that's also why they have been such a successful tourist destination, because of their very relaxed, chilled, accepting all types kind of attitude. I really believe that.
And so people in the TI community will always feel welcome.
Always
there.
Feel welcome. I mean, always. I've never seen anybody unpleasant to anybody, no matter.
Is there any sort of do's and don'ts about things like holding hands?
No, because once upon a time, all the men in Bali also used to hold hands, arms over shoulders. That was sort of a statement of their friendship, actually. Mm. So that's quite normal. And women too, always sort of arm in arm, etc. So back in the day, it was more unusual for a husband and wife to hold hands. So they're quite used to that too.
Oh, that is good to know. Yeah.
And there are three little gay bars in Legian, Seminyak area, right next to each other. So you basically go and put on your shimmy shoes and you head down there and you go from bar to bar, and they've got drag queens performing.
Well, they're very good at that. Yeah,
their performances are amazing, aren't they? I know. You feel as though at one stage I thought, I'm really watching Britney here tonight. And then there's the doof doof music, so you've got your opportunity to wave your arms up in the air and do your own.
Is everything. Dancing, there's something to everyone. Yeah.
Now, speaking of something for everyone, your cooking school, and also, Russ, I may add, Janet runs a Spice Islands tour. She's also a tour guide.
Oh, my God, I can't keep up with you, Janet. How do you do that?
I read the description of Janet's tour, and it just made me want to get on that boat immediately. It's a boat trip around the Indonesian Spice Islands.
Oh. Yeah, so we're doing two this year, one in April, which actually won't be on the boat the entire time. So Spice Islands, the Maluku's, and in particular Bandanera. So it's eastern Indonesia. It's kind of towards Papua, above Darwin.
Mm. Ah, cool. Mm.
So that's where the source of nutmeg was. You know, that's those islands were the only place in the world where nutmeg grew, and that's why Indonesia became a Dutch colony for 350 years because of the spices, cloves, nutmeg, mace. So, yeah, we I'll do two. We start in Ambon, which again is eastern Indonesia, and we'll take the fast boat to the Spice Islands for 5 days. And the second one, we start again in Ambon and then take a Phoenici boat, which is it's based on like an old Indonesian pirate ship, you know, a teak boat, and we'll sail to the Spice Islands.
Divine.
Yeah, it's pretty divine.
God, you just make everything sound so glamorous, I tell you.
So in case you can't go to the Spice Islands, you can, of course, visit your hotel.
Hotel, yep.
Which is the Honeymoon Hotel. And, of course, your venue, Casa Luna.
Yes, yeah,
and
that's our restaurant.
And do you still have that beautiful homeware store that I go into?
I do.
Every time I go into Ubud, I walk around and look at that. Ooh, look at that. Ooh, and I pick everything up.
So what's your surname again, Janet? Sorry.
Denif.
Okay, so I just need to stand at the entrance to Ubud itself and say, does anyone know where Janet Denif is? And I'm going to be pointed in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's awesome that you've done all of these amazing things with your
life. It's all under the banner of home. It's all to do with home, food. I mean, it's all kind of just those basic needs.
Absolutely. Best time of the year to go to Bali.
Which is the best time,
do
you
say? Yes, it is, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, but the weather-wise is probably June.
Yeah.
But
I've been there in December plenty of times and the weather was fine. Yeah. Rains a bit. But
well, it rained a lot last year, but apparently that's over.
Yeah. So, Janet, you'll be, of course, hosting your Balinese Warong in Melbourne as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. Yep. I almost said the Melbourne Food and Writers Festival. That'd be a great combination.
It actually would.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And that event will be held whereabouts and
when? That's at Tolanos. Mm. And and it'll be March 23 and 24. So we're really excited, and we'll actually be cooking the pig on the spit on the sidewalk out the front of the restaurant. So it'll be truly like a Balinese warung.
That's going to be really kooky.
Back from India.
Oh, my God, you have to come down.
Yeah. And the other thing is it's exactly opposite where the Pride Centre will be built.
Okay.
Just if anyone knows where the Pride Centre will be built at the old Munro site. The Tolanos is directly opposite there. So, Janet, if people – do you know how much the tickets are?
They're $99, and it's you get a welcome drink, a lovely spritzy kind of rosé thing, which is gorgeous and refreshing. And then, of course, the two courses. You can either have babi guling or the chicken, or maybe you can have a bit of both. And then we do some lovely desserts with sago and black rice, which, of course, is a superfood these days.
Mm.
And we'll do those sort of caramelized bananas as well.
Now, entice me with sago. I have never been able to get across the line with sago. Yeah. I've looked at a menu and it says sago.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, I don't think I could touch that. But
I love it.
Do you?
Well, I mean, when you get sago pudding, that's not actually sago, that's tapioca. But you know, in eastern Indonesia, sago is a staple, and they make one dish called papeda, which is like it's almost like wallpaper paste. So it's just this really soft kind of porridge, but it's clear.
Wow.
But it's actually really cooling when you eat it. They tend to eat it with like a fish soup with turmeric. It's actually soothing and cooling on the system. You can sort of feel it sliding down. So it's quite lovely, actually. I'm sure it must be highly nutritious because it's from the trunk of a tree.
Wow.
So, I mean, it's a natural carbohydrate and just an incredibly intriguing ingredient.
What's your must-have drink in Bali?
Oh, Brahm, rice wine.
Okay.
Oh. Well, as a natural drink, yeah. I mean, arak is a bit strong, and sometimes, well, I've had a few people die from time to time because they've mixed formaldehyde in it or something like that. Oh, damn, I didn't mean to do that. I'm so sorry.
Dear.
I know, yeah.
So do you have a, you know, just to finish off, if someone comes to Ubud and they want to see something that, you know, see something perhaps a little bit secret or a little bit hidden, or is there a place that sort of sums up Ubud that you would always tell people to go?
I think for me, one of the lovely things you can do is do the ridge walk across the Champuan Ridge.
I've done that many times.
Yeah, what they call Bukit Cinta. Cinta means love, and it translates as the love hill. And there's also the beautiful temple underneath, you know, that
Is that the temple at the beginning of the walk?
Yeah, Gunung Lebah. Yep. It's on a sacred site. And, I think that just the walks for me are really fantastic.
It is a beautiful part. Yeah. And, of course, Russ, when you walk through the rice paddies these days, there are little restaurants and cafes out in the rice paddies.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yep.
Yeah.
Look, you know, we have visited Ubud today and we have laughed and joked and lived every minute of Janet's wonderful life, who I have to say is quite extraordinary, the things that she's done since she's been living in Indonesia. And I have really enjoyed the show. It's that time that we have to say goodbye to everybody. And I can't wait to get to Ubud to visit with Janet and to see all these extraordinary restaurants and homewares and goodness knows what else. When will you be there, Fee?
I was actually just looking at flights today to get to the food festival, which is going to be in April.
Yes.
And I guess that's the first trip. I didn't make it last year, so this will be my supposed trip from then.
All right. And would you like to say goodbye to our listeners in Indonesian for us today, Janet?
I guess I just say selamat tinggal and sampai bertemu lagi, like that, which means goodbye and until we meet again.
Thank you, Janet, for coming on the show.
Thank you, Janet.
My pleasure. Thank you. Terima kasih.
And there's another escape hour for you, Fiona. It's been great to see you again. I look forward to catching up with you again in a couple of weeks, huh?
Oh, I think that might be next week.
You and Mark Adams will be in.
Oh, that's right. Yep. When are you back?
The following 25th, I think I'll be back. So.
Excellent. Well, I'll see you then. Safe travels, Russ.
Yeah, stay fabulous.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.